meetings at midnight, or agreeing to attend a budget review meeting that starts a half hour before the children need to be picked up from daycare. What is the ultimate result of all ambition? You know. Inscribe it on your heart, needlepoint it on a pillow. Say it out loud when you get up and just before retiring. Make it your mantra, that personal phrase that brings all things into focus. Doing so will help remind you that the greatest adventure of our lives is finding our way back home.
How, but in custom and ceremony, are innocence and beauty born? W.B. Yeats.
Ceremony and custom give birth to beauty, restoring a sense of wonder to our daily round. Most of us are far too jaded for our own good. We've seen it all. Nothing surprises us anymore, which is precisely our problem. We only think we've seen it all. What we haven't begun to see is the abundance that surrounds us, the beauty that gift wraps the extravagance of each day. The best way to renew our sense of the sacred is through personal rituals. I treasure a little book called Ceremonials of Common Days, written in 1923 by Abby Graham. I found it languishing on a dark, dusty secondhand bookshelf and ransomed it for a dollar. Now my hand-printed oracle, with its blackboard cover of yellow and green woodcut flowers, sits on my desk. The gold lettering on its spine reminds me that perception comes only when we pace ourselves. Nothing is too insignificant in the eyes of the authentic self. Nothing is beneath notice. There are numerous holidays, from the Old English Holy Day, throughout the year, falling just when we need cheering up. We respond to them as if companies come to call, bringing out our special dishes, linens, crystal, flowers, and candles. We actually do most of our living among the common days, taking them for granted just the way we do the people we love. Yet myriad occasions during the course of each day cry out for consecration. A liturgy of commonplace moments ripe for personal ritual might include sipping the first cup of coffee, putting on one's public face, eating at one's desk, window shopping, making a long-desired purchase, crossing the threshold at night, changing into comfortable clothes, hearing the sound of a loved one's homecoming footsteps, sitting down to a simple meal, being paid, traveling on business, sharing a laugh, or a confidence, or both, indulging in rainy day reveries, curling up to watch videos at home, sleeping late and having breakfast in bed, starting a good book, losing 5 pounds, having a good cry, and so to bed. There is no shortage of common day ceremonies waiting to be enjoyed, only weary imaginations in need of inspirational transfusions. To make a day, it took an evening and a morning, at least to make the first day. But that was when the world was new, and there was in it only light and darkness, day and night, and God, Abby Graham calls to our remembrance. The world has grown more complicated since that creative era. To make a day now, it takes bells and whistles and clocks and desks and committees and meetings and money and a serial of daily newspaper editions and hungry people and people who are too tired and luncheon engagements and telephones and noise and shouting and much hurrying. All these things and many others it takes now, in addition to an evening and a morning. Perhaps these ingredients are necessary for the concoction of a day, but when I come to observe the ceremonial of evenings and mornings, they do not seem to be the reason why light and darkness were separated and day and night created. Whatever be my philosophy, I too must work to make enough money to pay my share towards bells and whistles and the trains and the luncheon engagements and the privilege of hurrying. But as I watch the stars of evening and in the morning open my window toward the east, I shall observe the ceremonial of quietness of heart, of simplicity, and poise or spirit that I may keep my soul and the soul of others free from entanglements in the machinery of a day.
Let us imagine care of the soul, then, as an application of poetics to everyday life. Thomas More.
Soul, created on the sixth day, after the cherubim and seraphim, after the dominions, virtues, powers, principalities, archangels, and angels, after light was called forth from the void of darkness, after morning and evening were delineated, after space and time, after air, fire, water, earth, after the sun, moon, and stars were hung in the heavens, after the universe began spinning, after its power was switched on and its energy was charged, after the music of the spheres began the celestial concerto, after the beasts ran upon the fields and the birds soared, after the garden was in full bloom. Only after all was made ready, and the great Creator pronounced it very good, only then was it the Beloved's moment. For the Beloved, to be known through all eternity as soul, was sent into the world on divine breath as spirit laughed and cried. Soul was born in both joy and pain, blown into a handful of dust. Divinity was to live and move and have its being in a creature made of mud. There you have it. Go figure. Which is precisely what men and women have tried to do down through the ages. But even reason, intellect, imagination, passion, poetry, prayer, art, sex, song, and saxophone cannot unravel or fully reveal the mystical nature of our souls, let alone understand it. Obviously, after 25,000 years of trying, we're not meant to understand the essence of soul. But we can come to know her. For we were created for no other reason than to love, nurture, nourish, sustain, protect, uplift, inspire, delight, charm, and comfort the beloved presence within each of us. Psychotherapist and writer Thomas More calls this profound attention to the authentic needs that stir deep within, caring for our souls. It is through the small details of everyday life that we make our souls feel welcome. Tending the things around us and becoming sensitive to the importance of home, daily schedule, and maybe even the clothes we wear are ways of caring for the soul, More tells us in his deeply moving meditation, Care of the Soul, a guide for cultivating depth and sacredness in everyday life. Today, be willing to ask your guest what she requires to make her stay more pleasurable. Ask often, what do you need at this moment? What would bring you peace, contentment, joy? It may be to slow down, take a walk, hug a child, caress a cat, flip through a magazine, call your sister, send a funny card to a friend, take a nap, order Chinese carryout, watch a favorite movie. Have a good cry. Find a drugstore with an old-fashioned soda fountain. Solve an English mystery. Turn in early. Dream. Fantasize. Pray. Whatever it might be, she will tell you. Ask. Stay is a charming word in a friend's vocabulary, Louisa May Alcott reminds us. Stay, my beloved. Stay. Say it now. Say it often. Come live with me and be my love. Stay.
Once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always. Marjorie Williams.
On Christmas morning, the bunny, sitting in the top of the boy's stocking with a sprig of holly between his paws, looked quite splendid. He was fat and bunchy in all the right places, with a soft, spotted white and brown coat, thread whiskers, and ears lined in pink sateen. The boy was enchanted and played with the rabbit for 2 whole hours, until the family directed his attention to all the other wonderful parcels lying under the tree. and in the excitement at looking at all the new presents, the Velveteen Rabbit was forgotten. For a long time, the bunny remained just another plaything in the nursery. But he didn't mind, because he was able to carry on long philosophical discussions with the old skin horse, who was very old, wise, and experienced in the strange ways of nursery magic. One of the rabbit's favorite topics of conversation was on becoming real. Here is the heart of Marjorie Williams' mystical tale of the transformative power of love, The Velveteen Rabbit, written in 1927. The skin horse patiently explained to the bunny that real isn't how you are made. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Becoming real doesn't happen overnight to toys or people. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand, the old skin horse explained. In order for toys to become real, they must be loved by a child. In order for us to become real, we must become lovers of real life in all its complexity and uncertainty. Like the Velveteen Rabbit, we long to become real, to know what authenticity feels like. Sometimes this hurts. The thought of losing our whiskers and having our tail come unsewn is frightening. In a world that judges by appearances, it's embarrassing having all the pink rubbed off your nose. The Velveteen Rabbit isn't alone in wishing to become real without uncomfortable or unpleasant things happening. One of the ways that we become real without too much discomfort is by growing gradually into our authenticity. As you learn to acknowledge, accept, and appreciate what it is that makes you different from all the other toys in the cupboard, the process begins. As you learn to trust the wisdom of your heart and make creative choices based on what you know is right for you, process becomes progress. As you learn to endow even the smallest moment of each day with love, progress becomes reality perfected. Your black button eyes might have lost their polish, but now these windows to the soul see only beauty. You become not only real to those who know and love you, but real to everyone. You become authentic.
It's so easy to be wicked without knowing it, isn't it? Anne Shirley, the heroine of L.M. Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables.
A friend and I were chatting away on the phone when she blithely confessed to doing something totally outrageous, but hilarious. "You're so bad," I admonished her with admiration, especially because 99% of the time, she is too good for her own good. After we stopped laughing long enough to catch our breath, she suggested that bad girls have something to teach the rest of us. How to spot a bad girl. Bad girls sip only champagne and cocktails, not beer, wine, sherry, mineral water, cafe latte, or Darjeeling tea. Think martinis, stingers, black Russians. Bad girls prefer spandex, halters, high heels, fishnet stockings, silk, suede, leather, or white satin cut on the bias and black satin cut down to here. Bad girls have blonde, raven, or flaming tresses, red mouths and nails. Think Mae West, Rita Hayworth, Ava Gardner. But the baddest girls have mousy brown hair. Bad girls wear capri pants, mules, cashmere, or mohair twin sets, silk scarves covering their pin curls, and black sunglasses to the grocery store, then don black tuxedos and silver fox boas at night. Bad girls are in touch with their inner bitch because they run with Dobermans wearing studded black leather collars. Bad girls travel to Vegas with their ex's gold card while their own name is still on it, are passionately loyal to their friends, have been known to torture those who break the hearts of pals. Bad girls called the Psychic Friends Network have their own astrologer. No, a cusp is not an intimately transmitted condition. Bad girls listen to Billie Holiday, know the importance of regular waxing. Bad girls exercise muscles the rest of us don't even know we have. Bad girls smell expensive and never leave the house without wearing fabulous earrings. Read Nietzsche by the National Enquirer. Can pronounce Goethe and recite Le Fleur de Mal. Bad girls use cigarette holders. Really bad girls attend cigar dinners. Bad girls like disguise. They like presenting themselves as perfect moms, ice princesses, and librarians. Bad girls are passionate while the rest of the world is cool. Prefer gold to silver. Bear their midriffs, never their souls. Bad girls make hay on Ralph Lauren sheets. But bad girls never marry for love, which is why they often change their names. Really bad girls have numbered bank accounts. Bad girls know it's not the cards you're dealt, but how well you play your hand. Bad girls win at blackjack, vacation at backgammon tournaments in Monaco. Frequent pool halls, but shoot billiards. Have a bookie, accountant, and lawyer on retainer. Bad girls send large checks to good causes and never take a tax deduction. Bad girls don't just want to have fun, they make sure that they do. Bad girls are committed to the philosophy of personal pleasure. Most of us are only bad girls in our dreams. But there's a pattern in the bad girl lifestyle that deserves contemplation. Bad girls buy what they want to buy, eat what they want to eat, wear what they want to wear, sleep when they want to sleep. Bad girls do not have therapists because they don't need them. Instead, bad girls have housekeepers and masseuses. Bad girls realize this isn't a dress rehearsal. Real life is what you make of it. You can be bad, or you can be good. You just sure as hell better be authentic.
Joy.
The simple abundance journey takes us to undiscovered territory. We learn each day how cultivating gratitude tills the soil of our soul, and then how the seeds of simplicity and order send their roots down deep into the earth of our everyday existence. As we progress, harmony inspires us with quiet courage to create an authentic life for ourselves and those we love. With patience, beauty blossoms, and our hearts experience not only happiness, which is often fleeting, but a wellspring of joy that refreshes and renews. Finally, we are ready to embrace the path of the sixth simple abundance principle, joy.
The whole of science is nothing more than a refinement of everyday thinking. Albert Einstein.
There is a significant difference between thinking you know and actually knowing. Just as there's a significant difference between superficial change and change on a cellular level. It's one thing to move the furniture around for a fresh new look. It's quite another to rearrange your DNA, your destiny, nature, and aspirations, which is exactly what you're doing when you search for your authenticity. Start to do that, and you get a fresh new life. When I started writing this book, I knew that if I integrated gratitude, simplicity, order, harmony, beauty, and joy into my daily round, a sense of lack diminishes and a sense of abundance increases. That seemed to be quite enough. What I didn't know, or even anticipate, was the potency of the simple abundance process when combined with passionate and persistent reflection over 2 years. It is virtually impossible to write a book on authenticity as a spiritual and creative path and not be profoundly changed by it. On paper, Einstein's mathematical equation, E equals mc squared, appears rather benign, doesn't it? It led to the development of the atomic bomb. On paper, gratitude, simplicity, order, harmony, beauty, joy equal authenticity appears equally benign. But I have discovered that this equation leads to complete personal and spiritual transformation. A mystical metamorphosis of our particular DNA that's so deep our egos don't know whether they're coming or going. One minute we're sure of ourselves, the next we're second-guessing. This can be very disconcerting to our conscious selves. Of all the definitions of the ego I've ever discovered, my favorite is Joseph Campbell's. What you think you want, what you will to believe, what you think you can afford, what you decide to love, what you regard yourself as bound to. Now there's one tough babe to reckon with, and she's got a stranglehold on your destiny, nature, and aspirations that's so strong it will take nothing less than a divine detonation before she lets go. Don't worry. About this time, you're poised for critical mass, that point when a self-sustaining chain reaction occurs. In physics, nuclear fusion occurs when two separate elements, like hydrogen and helium, are forced together. Through the exertion of extreme pressure and temperature, a surge of energy as powerful as the sun is suddenly released until the hydrogen and helium are completely transformed, producing an entirely new force in the universe. This is how new stars are created. In your search for authenticity, a similar process occurs. You fuse the six simple abundance principles, or outward lifestyle changes, with your own inner work, or what Einstein called the refinement of everyday thinking. Now exert real life's pressures and the heat of your own passions on the six principles, and ponder for at least 1 to 2 years. The result? One day the transformative process builds to a point at which it can no longer be contained within. A huge surge of creative energy is suddenly released, bringing forth a completely new entity. Your authentic self. The visible manifestation of your soul. When this happens, what you think you want, what you will to believe, what you think you can afford, what you decide to love, and what you regard yourself as bound to, will seem as if they belonged to another woman. They did. After passionately and persistently exploring the origins of the universe for decades, Albert Einstein came to know that something deeply hidden had to be behind things. When you passionately and persistently search for your wholeness, you'll know as well.
Maybe one of these days I'll be able to give myself a gold star for being ordinary. And maybe one of these days I'll give myself a gold star for being extraordinary, for persisting. And maybe one day I won't need a star at all. Sue Bender.
I haven't yet gotten to the point where I don't need gold stars, gleaming, golden, five-pointed proof that I've accomplished something that was a bit of a stretch, especially if it was remembering to treat myself with the loving kindness that seems so much easier to give to others. Back in the days of blackboards and chalk, gold stars came in small cardboard boxes. You'd take the lid off to find 500 gold paper foil stars, stiff with dry glue backs. Running your fingers through the small pile of possibilities, you'd hear the rustling of self-worth. Nowadays, gold stars get pulled off self-sticking sheets. You don't even get the taste of success on your tongue. But I love them just the same. A good friend of mine has a different memory of gold star days. Her mother maintained star charts for each of her 8 children. Every Sunday night after dinner, the past week's reckoning would occur in the dining room, as the gridded charts revealed who had excelled at homework, chores, personal hygiene, and behavior, and who hadn't. The striving for gold stars was supposed to be a motivational game. However, accumulating gold stars under duress wasn't fun for Anne, despite the fact that she excelled in everything and was a model good girl. For her, the pressure of constant evaluation was excruciating. Opening the cardboard box was a psychological and emotional stretching on the rack of self-respect. But gold star days are very different when we give them to ourselves. When you give yourself a gold star, Sticking it to an empty calendar block, the star twinkles, winks, and whispers, "Good for you, girl." I particularly like to give myself gold stars when I'm embarking on a new self-nurturing pastime or reviving one that has fallen by the wayside. Walking, creative movement, healthy eating, writing my dialogue pages, meditation, slowing down, balancing work and play. The spirit may be willing, but all too often the flesh gets sidetracked. The extraordinary days of our lives don't need gold stars. But ordinary days sure can be brighter with a shiny, five-pointed pat on the back.
The birthday of my life is come. My love is come to me. Christina Georgina Rossetti.
Today isn't my birthday, but it might be yours. If it is, I hope you're having a wonderful day. A day of authentic indulgences, joyful simplicities, contemplation, closure, and celebration. We should all commemorate our birthdays that way. I've reached a point where I'm not really big on major birthday gatherings, but I do need to distinguish the birthday of my life in special ways from the rest of the calendar. So I've created my own birthday ritual to help me commemorate the year just passed while invoking illumination for the year to come. First, I take a soothing bath, symbolically washing away the past year's pain, sorrow, regrets, mistakes, and guilt. Then I go alone to my bedroom and light one votive candle for each year. This is not as daunting as it sounds if you use the tiny tea lights that come in their own metal container. Gather them together on a table or spread them around the room. My favorite music is playing in the background. Fragrant incense fills the air, and beside my bed is a bouquet of my favorite flowers. I put on a brand new nightgown and get comfortable in my freshly made bed. Then I offer a personal psalm of thanksgiving for my life. As the candles burn, I reflect on my personal journey so far. I look at old and recent photographs, then read selections from my gratitude journal. So many wonderful moments from the past year have already slipped from my conscious memory. It's comforting to call them back for a brief visit. Next, I ask for a birthday gift that only the giver of good can bestow. To conceive a wonderful new dream. To realize a dream delayed. To overcome an old fear or be released from an old pain. To experience a new freedom, to discover a new strength, to find a new friend, to achieve a long-sought goal, to reach toward a new aspiration, to overcome a new challenge. I sip a glass of champagne, then slowly open a beautifully wrapped gift from my authentic self. And of course, it's the perfect present. Many people who love you will try, but no one can celebrate your birthday exactly the way you need for it to be observed. That's because no one really knows the year you've just completed. No one else has lived it. What's more, each year is different. Your 32nd and 48th birthdays won't begin to resemble each other. Your husband, lover, children, friends, and coworkers can be aware of recent events that have unfolded in your life, but only your authentic self knows how deeply these events resonate. Perhaps a loved one died 6 months ago. The rest of the world assumes you've moved on, when the reality is that the shock of your loss has only begun to wear off, and your grief has just set in. Perhaps the perfect birthday gift is to have a special photograph of your loved one professionally framed or restored. No one else is going to know you need this emotional touchstone, but you do. Maybe you need not a boisterous family party, but a few private hours to remember, to honor the sacredness of the profound changes that have occurred in your life. Birthdays are new beginnings, but they're also moments of personal closure, which are crucial if we are to grow positively into our authenticity. Every birthday, not just the ones marking new decades, is a significant milestone. Every age brings with it 365 real life lessons. We turn not older with years, but newer every day. Emily Dickinson reassures the birthday girl in all of us. And that's certainly something worth celebrating in grand style. So, happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. I've got a good feeling that this coming year is going to be your best yet. Heaven knows you deserve it.
Men don't make passes at crones with big asses. Sybil Shepherd.
Grow older, I shall. Grow older gracefully, I shall try. Grow into a crone over my dead body. Crone. What an ugly word to describe such a creative chapter in a woman's story. But no woman need become a crone if she doesn't want to. You can be a wise woman without being a hag. Personally, I think invoking the image of a crone as a figure to emulate diminishes a woman's sense of well-being rather than enhances it. The French call feminine Act II players women of a certain age. And that describes a lot of women very succinctly. We become more certain of ourselves as our authenticity emerges. When it comes to a choice between Lena Horne's sexy chuckle or Madame Mim's gleeful cackle, I'm much more inspired by the lady and her music than by the lady with her magic spells. I think it's vital for us to change the concept of feminine aging from invisible to vibrant, because a sweeping societal change is waiting in the wings as the millennium approaches. Fasten your seatbelt, boys. Some of you are in for a bumpy ride as the century of women begins. By the year 2000, 42% of all American women will be 50 or older. However, we really don't have to wait to start making an attitude adjustment about second acts. We can start today. Modern women are already redefining the midlife passage that Gail Sheehy calls the Flaming Fifties. After 5 years of research for her new book, New Passages, Mapping Your Life Across Time, she's discovered that the women of the 1990s are in their 50s. And from a look at the company she keeps, Barbara Streisand, Linda Ellerbe, Janet Reno, Judy Collins, Lauren Hutton, Jane Fonda, Martha Stewart, Donna Shalala, Judith Jameson, Barbara Boxer, Diane Sawyer, and Tina Turner, the 50-something decade sizzles. Women at this stage of life find themselves blazing with energy and accomplishment as never before in history. The struggles that sap so much of their emotional energy have subsided by now. The results of Sheehy's research strongly suggest that the dominant influence on a woman's well-being is not income level or marital status. The most decisive factor is age. Older is happier. Coco Chanel reminds us that nature gives you the face you have when you are 20. Life shapes the face you have at 30. But it is up to you to earn the face you have at 50. As long as the face staring back at you is authentic, you can call yourself anything you want to. But you'll find me hanging out backstage with red-hot chanteuses and not my cronies.
If, as Herod, we filled our lives with things, and again with things, if we consider ourselves so unimportant that we must fill every moment of our lives with action, when will we have the time to make the long, slow journey across the desert, as did the Magi, or sit and watch the stars, as did the shepherds, or brood over the coming of the child, as did Mary? For each one of us, there is a desert to travel, a star to discover, and a being within ourselves to bring to life.
I first discovered this profound expression of simple abundance's essence just before I began writing this book. While browsing in a gallery in Vermont, I was drawn across the room to a display of work by the gifted calligraphy and graphic artist Michael Podesta. There it was, an elegant script rendering of exquisite grace. "That's it," my authentic self whispered. "That's simple abundance." Of course it was, and I had to have it. But when I spotted the price tag, I knew it wouldn't be at that moment. "That's okay," I reassured Herod's daughter, writing the quote down. "Just accept the gift of the quote right now. The print will come when it's supposed to." I picked up the artist's mail order catalog and continued to enjoy a wonderful day with Katie, her cousins, and my sister. Back at my mother's, I mentioned the print and how this quote was the very first one I had for the book. "It's perfect for Christmas," I told her. "It sums up the book in one amazing paragraph." When I arrived home, Michael Podesta's print was waiting for me, a good luck gift from my mother. After I had cried and laughed and called to thank her, I hung it over my meditation table. Its beauty acts as an anchor to my bedroom, the place where I sit, work, dream, sleep, love, and pray. Its timeless message, a deep harbor for my restless heart, a soulful, safe haven.
First, we have to believe, and then we believe. G.C. Lichtenberg.
Many dreams still wait in the wings. Many aspirations are just within your grasp if you keep stretching. Many hungers need nourishment. Many yearnings must be acknowledged so that they can be fulfilled. Many authentic sparks must be fanned before passion performs her perfect work in you. Throw another log on the fire. This is not the day you quit. This is not the day you cry. Oh, okay, if you really have to. But this is the day you stare down every naysayer in your life who doesn't get it yet. Because you do. Finally. Now you know that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. This is the day you shout, "I believe." Keep on shouting it until you're hoarse. No more muttering under your breath. Do you know what happens every time a child says, "I don't believe in fairies"? A fairy falls down dead. Do you know what happens every time a woman says, "I don't believe it's taking too long"? The woman falls down dead, inside, where it counts. But it just might take another 40 years before they get around to burying you. And do you know what they'll say as your ashes are scattered? "I don't think I can ever remember a time when she was truly happy." And they'll be right. This is not the time you stop believing. You simply can't afford the luxury of skepticism. And what must you believe with every breath until you do believe? How about the mystical alchemy of style and spirit? In the past, spirituality has been separated from our lifestyle. But now you know this doesn't make sense. Never did, never will. Now you know that the union of authentic style and spirit creates substance. You. So keep on believing that you have the passion, intelligence, brilliance, creativity, wisdom, clarity, depth, and savvy to find that quiet center of solace, serenity, and strength necessary to create and sustain an authentic life. Everyday life is the prayer. An authentic life is the most personal form of worship. When you start believing, you'll discover that all things are really possible.
The world is round, and the place which may seem like the end may also be only the beginning. Ivy Baker Priest.
Life is a journey. Life as safari. Life as a pilgrimage. Life as a garden. Life as the highest art. Pathfinders, prospectors, pioneers, detectives, explorers, archaeologists, pilgrims, poets, sojourners, gardeners, artists of the everyday, seekers of the sacred in the ordinary. That's who we are. Seekers of real life, the mystical in the madness, the holy mysteries of the mundane. Seekers of love, passion, wholeness, authenticity. Where are we headed? We're headed home. But before we arrive, there are vast worlds awaiting exploration. Worlds within, worlds without. Earth, heaven, heaven on earth. Sometimes the terrain is rocky and the slopes steep. Sometimes the jungle is thick and its interior very dark. Sometimes the water is deep and the waves extremely rough. Do you see now why we need some variety in our approaches? How will we know when we get there? You'll know. It's that simple. Real things are. Are we there yet? Not quite. But here's where we must part company, at least for a little while. I've got some discoveries I need to make on my own, and so do you. But you won't be alone. Someone who loves you unconditionally is at the helm. Divine love sustains you, surrounds you, enfolds you, protects you. Go in peace. You're as ready as you ever will be, well equipped for the adventures awaiting. Divine substance, which is your only reality, provides abundantly. But you must ask. Ask for help. Ask for guidance. Ask for grace. Ask for the power to be switched on. Ask to catch the flow. Ask to soar. Ask. 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 Ask for a respite from all your crises. Be willing to surrender suffering, sorrow, pain. Surrender expectations. Ask to be surprised by joy. Give thanks. Wait. Wait expectantly. Watch what happens. Get excited. Open your arms as wide as you can to receive all the miracles with your name on them. Never forget that all you have at this very moment is all you need. Simple abundance is a creative and practical path, full of joyful simplicities waiting to be revealed in the small moments. But don't forget, the path is spiral. If you get stuck, look out at the wider vista and see how far you've traveled. For the parts of the journey when only the far horizon is in sight, simple abundance becomes a caravel of contentment, a small but sturdy vessel strong enough to withstand storms. Her triangular sails have been spiritually designed to take advantage of winds blowing from either side of real life, the shadows and the light. Let's see. Do you have everything? Get out your treasure map. Think of your illustrated discovery journal as your ship's logbook. Your wise and loving heart is your compass to determine the latitude and longitude of passion. Check it every day. Trust it to keep you steady and on the mark. Love will not fail you. Believe. Believe in yourself. Believe in the one who believes in you. All things are possible to one who believes. Blessings on your courage. Navigate by the stars. Search the heavens for yours. Follow it. Keep on the lookout for soulful markers. They surround you. The soul's awakening is gratitude. The soul's essence is simplicity. The soul's serenity is order. The soul's haven is harmony. The soul's passion is beauty. The soul's purpose is joy. Pray your journey be a long one. Savor the stops along the way. They make the search marvelous, meaningful, memorable. Find and honor your own pace. There are still so many harbors to be seen for the first time. You're headed for someplace you've never been before. Keep your thoughts held high. Let personal passions stir your mind, body, and spirit. Set your course for Authentica. Legend has it that once you reach her shores, you'll never leave the same person. For if you find this sacred isle, you will remember what you have always known. You will discover the you you have always been. No longer will you see things as they are. Finally, you will see things as you are. Through the parting of the mists where doubt and faith meet, you will see the authentic self is the soul made visible. Godspeed.
This has been a Time Warner Audiobooks presentation of Simple Abundance, Living by Your Own Lights, written by Sarah Van Brannock and read by the author. Also featuring Teresa Stone and Andrew Kimonetsky. Produced and directed by Maya Thomas. Adapted for audio by John Whitman. Solo piano music performed by Kelly Yost, available on Channel Productions. Production coordinated by Daniel Metcalf. Tape edited, mixed, and mastered by Canyon Digital Post. To listen to samples, read more about the authors, learn about digital audio, and buy digital audio books, please visit Time Warner Audiobooks websites at www.twbookmark.com and www.mytimewarneraudio.com.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.